Welcome to Sound Prints Audio Magazine, a production of the Kentucky Council of the Blind. Sound Prints is underwritten by the American Printing House for the Blind and the Louisville Downtown Lions Club. I'm Carla Rusheville. I'm your host for this week's magazine. Welcome to Sound Prints for the week of May 5, 2024. The first Sound Prints was aired on Monday, May 13, 2002. Sound Prints began as a live radio show, expanded to be heard on ACB radios several years later, and in 2013 changed to a recorded program only, distributed on CD and as a podcast. We will celebrate the 22nd anniversary of the first Sound Prints show next week on our May 12 podcast, and we hope you will celebrate with us. If you have a Sound Prints memory you would like to share, such as a favorite show or feature or guest from the past, call us at 502-895-4598 so that we can include your memory in our May 12 show. The GLCB auction will be on Friday, May 10, on the KCB Zoom line. Proceeds help support Roundabout and other activities, as well as the Kentucky Council of Citizens with Low Vision, Tri-State Library Users, Guide Dog Users of Kentuckiana, South Central Kentucky Council of the Blind, and KCB Next Generation. Some of the items up for bid include a new-in-the-box Ruby video magnifier, a HIMS Sense player, an Echo Show, Echo Dot 5th Generation, and Echo Pop, an AM-FM NOAA emergency weather radio that can power up by hand crank, solar, or USB cable, bags, purses, and totes from 31, Zion Canyon, JanSport, and more, a Bradford Exchange Peter Fabergé-style egg porcelain music box featuring Glinda the Good Witch from The Wizard of Oz. The music box is by Bradford Exchange. An amazing array of treats, including homemade red hots, strawberry or banana bread, your choice, brownies, oatmeal scotchies, fudge, strawberry preserves, batches of cookies, whoopie pies, and our popcorn and vintage candy package. For the home, we have a shark hand vac, a beautiful solid wood serving set, and an air fryer baking set. More items are yet to come. Register for the auction so you can bid by calling us at 502-895-4598 and look for a complete list of auction items in bid order on Thursday, May 9. We remind you that the South Central Kentucky Council of the Blind, our chapter in Bowling Green, holds a social hour every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m. Central Time, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern, on its Zoom line. Call 669-900-6833 and enter the code 763-689-4411. The Support Alliance of the Visually Impaired, SAVI, will have its quarterly business meeting on Tuesday, May 14, from 1 to 3 p.m. Central Time at Wesleyan Heights United Methodist Church, 1215 Sherm Road in Owensboro. Following the business meeting, there will be Kentucky Derby trivia with Sam Moore. For more information, call 270-686-8689. The next GLCB Bingo will be on Friday, May 17. Please watch the KCB events list for the schedule. The Eastern Kentucky Council of the Blind will meet on Saturday, May 18, at the Breathitt County Library in Jackson. To find out more about EKCB and future meetings and activities, call Ronnie Patrick, President, at 606-671-0226. The Tri-State Library Users will have its May business meeting on Saturday, May 18 at 11 a.m. on the KCB Zoom line. The number is 669-900-6833 and the code is 862-9889-6972. The next Focus on Your Future with Low Vision, sponsored by the Kentucky Council of Citizens with Low Vision, will be on Saturday, May 25, from 10 to 12:30 p.m. It is in person at the United Crescent Hill Ministries, 150 South State Street in Louisville. It's a great activity for people who are just losing their vision and for people who want to share ideas for living with low vision. There will be a light breakfast, discussion time, a chance to share information, and demo products that are useful to you when living with low vision. There will also be an opportunity to meet others who are experiencing the low vision journey. Doors will open at 9:30 a.m. If using TARC 3, please make return rides no later than 12:30 to 12:45 p.m. Guide Dog Users of Kentuckiana invites you to its May meeting on Monday, May 26 at 7 p.m. on the KCB Zoom line. To learn more about GDUKI, contact Terry Turloff, GDUKI President, at 502-551-6382. You can now browse the ACB Convention events at www.acbconvention.org. Pre-registration for the ACB Convention opens for members on May 13 and for non-members on May 20. Pre-registration closes on June 17 and does not reopen until July 5 in Jacksonville, Florida. As usual, this convention is a big deal and has a full week of virtual events and business from June 24 to June 29, and a week of in-person and virtual events from July 5 to July 12. Every KCB member who registers for the convention can be reimbursed for the pre-registration. The reimbursement will be made following the convention in August. Every KCB member who attends the convention in person in Jacksonville can receive up to 7 nights hotel stay based on double occupancy. And every KCB member who stays at least 3 days at the convention in Jacksonville will receive a $160 gift card to help with convention expenses. Call the KCB office at 502-895-4598 to find out how to take advantage of these stipends. Also, remember that in order to be able to participate as a member of ACB at this upcoming convention, you must join by May 24. On page 2 this week are several articles that have appeared on various email lists recently. Topics include web accessibility from the Department of Justice, the end of the Affordable Connectivity Program, how to get a Sam's Club membership card for just $14, and a history of Braille writing devices from the American Printing House for the Blind. On page 3, you'll hear about the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled moving from its 1291 Taylor Street address, rented for the last 57 years, to the Library of Congress headquarters. Also on page 3 is information about Braille books and Braille on demand. We are always hearing that Braille reading is decreasing, that nobody's reading Braille anymore. An article in the January-March issue of News Magazine, published by the NLS, discusses an increase in requests for Braille and Braille circulation. Here are some ways you can listen to sound prints. We are heard 12 times each week on ACB Media One. Listen there by using the ACB link on your phone or your Alexa device by asking her to open ACB Media and then choosing number one when prompted. We are heard at 8 p.m. Sunday, 8 a.m. Monday, 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. on Tuesday, 4 a.m. and 4 p.m. on Wednesday, 10 p.m. on Thursday, and 1 a.m., 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Fridays. Find Soundprints in the list of podcasts in the ACB Link app. Just open ACB Link on your phone, choose Podcasts from the menu, and scroll down the list to find Soundprints. Listen anytime, 24 hours a day, on the KCB information line by calling 773-572-6318. Be sure to check the opening menu for available shows, as we post some shows from past weeks as well. For more information about Soundprints, to comment on a recent show, or make a suggestion for a future topic, and to request a free subscription on CD playable on any standard CD player, call the Kentucky Council of the Blind at 502-895-4598. Page 2. Articles from around the Internet. The following articles are on a variety of subjects, and we are posting them here because we think you will be interested in some of these topics. The first of our articles this week was posted on April 25 by Chris Bell. Chris is a retired attorney and is a member of the ACB Board of Directors. This item was from the U.S. Department of Justice. The subject is Justice Department announces finalized compliance dates for Title II rule on web and mobile app accessibility. The Federal Register published the department's final rule under Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, which applies to state and local governments to improve web and mobile application access for people with disabilities. The rule clarifies how state and local governments can meet their existing ADA obligations as many of their activities move to the digital space. This rule, signed by the Attorney General earlier this month, adopts a technical standard for web and mobile accessibility to ensure that people with disabilities can better access important public services like healthcare, voting, and education. With today's publication, the dates by which state and local governments have to comply with the rule's requirements are now finalized. State and local governments with a population of 50,000 or more will have to be in compliance with the rule requirements beginning on April 24, 2026. State and local governments with a population of less than 50,000, as well as special district governments, will have to be in compliance beginning on April 26, 2027. This means that state and local governments' web content and mobile apps will have to generally meet the technical standard in the rule by these dates and on an ongoing basis after these dates. In the meantime, state and local governments still have existing Title II obligations. This means that even before the compliance dates, state and local governments must provide people with disabilities equal access to their services, programs, and activities offered via the web and mobile apps. For a high-level summary of the final rule, read the fact sheet. Individuals can also find the official version of the full rule in the Federal Register. The department also plans to issue a small entity compliance guide to assist small state and local governments with complying with the rule. To find out more about the ADA, visit ada.gov or call the Justice Department's toll-free ADA information line at 800-514-0301 VOICE or 833-610-1264 TTY. The next article is from CNET, published Thursday, April 25, 2024. The subject is ACP Sees Its Final Days, Alternative Internet Assistance at AT&T, Verizon, and More. From CNET. The Affordable Connectivity Program has reached its final days. April is the last month enrollees will receive the full monthly benefit of $30 to $75, leaving more than 25 million households with significantly higher internet bills come May. One in five Americans with internet subscriptions currently use the program to help pay for internet, and nearly half the households that take advantage of the ACP are military families, according to a White House fact sheet. Seniors, African Americans, and Latinos also use the ACP at higher rates. It's been the difference between choosing to have a roof over my head, whether to eat, or whether to pay for the internet, which has things like virtual appointments with my psychiatrist, Kenneth Sigler, a small business owner from Hernando, Mississippi, who uses the ACP, told CNET. It basically helps me to keep from having to choose what bills I'm going to pay. There is some hope that the program will be extended eventually. President Joe Biden called on lawmakers to extend the program on April 2. But for now, ACP subscribers will have to prepare for a world without the subsidy. There's no one resource that can replace the $14.2 billion ACP. But there are a variety of government programs, nonprofits, and discounted plans from providers that can help ease the transition. Lifeline. Lifeline is a federal subsidy that provides $9.25 per month to low-income households for home internet and cell phone plans. Its eligibility requirements are a little stricter than those of the ACP. Your income must be 135% or less than the federal poverty guidelines, or $40,500 a year for a family of four. You can also get Lifeline if you or someone who lives with you participates in any of the following programs: Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps, Medicaid, Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, Federal Public Housing Assistance, or FPHA, Veterans Pension, and Survivor's Benefits. If you live in California, Oregon, or Texas, you must check with your internet provider or visit your state's website to apply for the program. The FCC will vote on net neutrality in April. Here's what it should mean to you. State and local resources. Some states and cities across the country offer their own local versions of the ACP to help low-income households pay for internet. California, for example, has a website that allows you to search affordable options in your zip code based on various eligibility criteria, and Oregon provides an enhanced Lifeline benefit of $19.25 monthly. Cities like Chicago offer free internet to families in Chicago public schools and eligible city colleges through its Chicago Connected program. The best way for you to find these resources is by going to Google and searching for location internet resources. You can also check to see how your state is using the $2.75 billion allocated in the Digital Equity Act to help close the digital divide. Low-income programs from internet providers. Many internet providers have their own discounted plans available for low-income households, including AT&T, Spectrum, and Xfinity. Requirements vary, but they're usually similar to the ACP's, meeting certain income requirements or participating in a federal program like SNAP or the National School Lunch Program. Internet provider discounts. To determine which providers are available in your area, enter your address on the Federal Communication Commission's broadband map. Nonprofit organizations. There are a number of nonprofits around the country with the goal of closing the digital divide. Some help with monthly internet costs, while others provide devices that connect you to the internet. These organizations also receive nonprofit status from the IRS and were vetted by watchdogs like Charity Navigator and GuideStar.org. Part of the Interconnection nonprofit, Connect All provides refurbished computers to low-income users. Eligibility requirements are similar to those of the ACP. Participation in federal programs like SNAP or SSI will automatically qualify you for devices. Everyone On. Everyone On is one of the most wide-ranging internet nonprofits out there. You can use its locator tool to find low-cost plans and computers in your area, enroll in digital skills courses, and find local events that distribute devices. Human IT. This nonprofit accepts donations from corporations, refurbishes the devices, and sells them at a discount to veterans, low-income households, seniors, and other groups that qualify. It also offers low-cost internet through its mobile hotspot devices for less than $30 per month. Internet for All Now. This is an initiative of the nonprofit California Emerging Technology Fund that helps Californians find low-cost plans in their area. People in California can call and speak with a trained expert, but the website has resources that anyone in the country can use. National Digital Inclusion Alliance. The NDIA is a well-known hub for research and policy aiming to close the digital divide. And while it doesn't offer low-cost internet itself, it's a helpful resource for navigating what's out there. You can also use this map of NDIA affiliates providing broadband adoption services to see what's available in your area. Explore other internet plans in your area. If your bill's going up dramatically with the end of the ACP, another option is to search for other internet providers in your area. Most ISPs offer plans under $50 a month, and you can often find additional discounts for things like bundling with a cell phone plan or signing an annual contract. Purchasing your own equipment can also save you some extra money each month. It usually costs around $15 to rent a modem and router from your internet provider, while you can buy your own for as little as $100, especially if you go for refurbished equipment. That said, you'll need to make sure your modem is compatible with your provider before you make a purchase. This next information comes from PCMag.com, Technology Product Review, News, Prices, and Tips, published on Wednesday, April 24, 2024. You can get a one-year Sam's Club membership with auto-renew for $14. Subscribing to a wholesale club has long been a strategy for individuals to save on unconditional expenses, such as food, clothes, and appliances. Of course, with the right warehouse membership, you can save on these essential products while securing other bonus perks. For a limited time, you can get a one-year membership at Sam's Club. This one-year membership comes with auto-renewal for only $14, regular $50 for a limited time. While you're shopping for yourself or the family, you can discover incredible value on household goods, groceries, tech, clothing, appliances, and so much more. Shop in person at nearly 600 physical Sam's Club locations, or order from Sam's Club website and enjoy same-day delivery on select products. Extra fees may apply. If you shop at a Sam's Club location, members can access the Tire and Battery Center to ensure their vehicles are in peak shape. Select warehouses that also have gas stations, allowing Sam's Club members to enjoy members-only fuel savings. Sam's Club's members can also unlock extra perks for their travel needs. Discover savings on experiences like hotel accommodations, car rentals, live events, and much, much more. American Printing House, Wednesday, April 24, 2024. Blindness History Basics, History of Braille Writers. When 15-year-old Louis Braille presented his tactile system of raised dots in 1824, he hoped the new system would provide a simpler path to literacy for blind people, an easier way to read and write. The dot system, named after Louis, proved an immensely successful tool, enabling people using Braille to read as quickly as print readers. The system also offered the most effective writing method known for people who are blind and low vision. In Louis' day, writing was slow and laborious compared to today. Whether you used paper and pen or his new dot system, the young inventor could not have envisioned the machines and technology that would eventually create tools to help his system of six dots transform communication for people who are blind or low vision. Louis Braille punched a stylus into a slate to work with his code. The slate is a simple device, originally made of two pieces of wood or metal hinged together on one end. Writers insert heavy paper between the hinged pieces. Cells on the slate guide writers as they push down with their stylus to create an indentation. In order to read the words from left to right, a slate user has to write backwards and mirrored, so that when the paper is turned over, the dots are read in the correct order. Although using a stylus seems time-consuming today, it was revolutionary at the time and was the best method available until the machine age. Numerous companies worldwide manufactured these simple devices. APH began producing wooden and metal slates and styluses in the 1930s and continues to offer a plastic version today. The quest to create a better device to help people who are blind or low vision write quickly and easily, however, began before Braille became the universal code for people who are blind or low vision. During the war on the dots, inventors created devices to help people write in many of the competing codes. McElroy's Point Writer, 1887, and the Kaleidograph, 1894, were both designed for New York Point. APH purchased the rights to McElroy's Point Writer in 1887 and produced 47 of the devices in 1888. In 1890, Illinois School for the Blind Superintendent Frank Hall delivered the prototype of the first Braille writing machine based on typewriter design. The American Foundation for the Blind, AFB, purchased the design and production equipment for Hall's Braille writer in 1930. AFB discontinued Hall's Braille writer when its own machine, the Foundation writer, went into production in 1932. AFB produced approximately 2,000 Foundation writers between 1932 and 1947 when it went out of production. Like most early Braille writing machines, Hall's Braille writer and the Foundation writer were heavy. Their many moving parts were easily broken and difficult to repair. In the early 20th century, Perkins School for the Blind in Watertown, Massachusetts, based the design of their Braille writer on Hall's concept. The machine was heavy, not very durable, and needed frequent repair. Perkins director Gabriel Farrell halted production of the machine in 1931. Determined to create a machine that was not limited by the design issues of its predecessors, Farrell asked David Abraham, an employee of the Perkins Industrial Arts Program, to create a prototype of a Braille machine with specific desirable features. Abraham spent the next 5 years working on the machine in his basement and brought the prototype to Farrell in 1941, as America was entering World War II and national restrictions on manufacturing refocused machine production across the country. After World War II, Perkins and AFB trustees convinced Abraham's machine was superior to any other, worked together to finance and produce the machine. Loans secured by the two organizations allowed the first 2,000 Perkins Braille writers to be produced for a cost of $70 each. Originally offered for sale in 1951, the Perkins Braille writer is still in production. Today, the Perkins is the most widely used mechanical brailler in the world, with more than 375,000 machines distributed in over 170 countries. Today, most new devices to help people who are blind and low vision write are based on technology, but the durable Perkins Brailler continues to be a valuable tool for achieving literacy. Page 3. The following article is from News, January-March 2024, Volume 56, Number 1. News is a publication of the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. You can subscribe to News by contacting your Talking Book Library. In Kentucky, that number is 800-372-2968. This article is entitled, 57 Years After Leaving Capitol Hill, NLS is Returning Home. It is by Mark Lehman, editor of News. A half-mile walk up Georgia Avenue from the Petworth Metro Station to 1291 Taylor Street in Northwest Washington, D.C., takes you through a diverse neighborhood defined by both the old and the new. The bright red Zion Hill Baptist Church, built in 1911, is still there. But you'll also pass a 64,000-square-foot Safeway that's nearly three times the size of the 50-year-old grocery store it replaced in 2014. Above it, a 218-unit apartment building, Across the street, a new Instagram-friendly neighborhood bar and an Ethiopian takeout restaurant. A century-old row house hosts the performance space for Hispanic theater company Teatro de la Luna. But at the corner of Taylor Street is an organic market that opened in 2009 with more apartments above. Look to the left after you turn and you'll see a colorful public art mural painted in 2013 on the side wall of a neighborhood grocery. Generations of National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled NLS staff members who have worked at the former local government building at 1291 Taylor Street since 1967 have seen a lot of change on these blocks. And now, another change is coming to the neighborhood. After 57 years, NLS is going back home to Capitol Hill. The program's new offices will be on the third floor of the Library of Congress's John Adams Building, one floor below the space that housed most of its staff members before the move to Petworth. Returning to Capitol Hill has many advantages for NLS. Quote, "The money we save long-term by being back in a library building instead of rented space 5 miles away can be reinvested in service to our patrons, materials, and improved content delivery," NLS Director Jason Broughton says. Working on Capitol Hill will also give NLS staff members more opportunities to take part in programs and collaborate with their colleagues across the library. And the central location will make it easier for NLS to work with consumer groups and federal agencies that serve similar audiences and to engage with appropriators and other members of Congress. Quote, "And I know some folks will just be happy to have more choices for lunch and after-work get-togethers," Broughton says with a laugh. NLS had long been in discussions with Library of Congress leadership, Congress, and the architect of the Capitol about relocating from Petworth to the main library campus or other government-owned properties near Capitol Hill. Still, the news that the move was actually happening came as somewhat of a shock. Quote, "I've been hearing about that move almost from the day I started at NLS," says Alice O'Reilly, chief of the NLS Collections Division. "After 20 years, I'm looking forward to finally getting to participate in all the exciting things happening on Capitol Hill." End of quote. Moving NLS is more than a matter of relocating its 120 staff members. The basement at 1291 Taylor Street holds 90 years' worth of NLS circulating materials, Braille books, records, cassettes, and digital cartridges. Recently rediscovered in the collection was a near-pristine set of the very first talking books on 33 and a third RPM records, made for NLS by the American Foundation for the Blind in 1934. There are also shipping and receiving facilities, engineering labs for developing and testing NLS equipment, and an in-house recording studio initially built in 1971 with funds from a bequest by John Knight, a noted stage and radio actor who was one of the first talking book narrators. Quote, "It's a massive undertaking," says NLS Deputy Director Jason Yasner. "We have staff, collections, and equipment that need to find space on the Capitol Hill campus, and this requires the careful coordination of many library stakeholders. That said, we couldn't be more pleased to be coming home," and reintegrating with the rest of the library, end of quote. The move is taking place in stages, beginning with the director's office in February. It's scheduled to be complete by the end of the summer, in time for NLS to host its biennial National Conference of Librarians Serving the Blind and Print Disabled in September. What was then known as the Library's Division for the Blind and Physically Handicapped moved to 1291 Taylor Street after Congress expanded its mission to include serving people with disabilities who cannot hold or turn the pages of a book. We were screaming for space, an item in a December 1966 issue of the program's newsletter said, and with the expansion of the program and the resulting growth of staff and equipment, it became all too necessary. The move more than doubled the space available to the division, which at the time also served as DC's Braille and Talking Book Library, now located downtown at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library. It also put the program under one roof. While most of the staff members worked in the Adams Building, the administrative offices were across the street in the historic Jefferson Building. The NLS lot on Taylor Street was originally occupied by the American Ice Company, according to the property owner. After the company closed, its building was demolished and replaced in 1960 by the current one. DC's Department of Human Services, DHS, was its first occupant before it moved up the block in 1966. While the block may not have the cachet of Capitol Hill, it has a storied place in DC's cultural history. According to the property owner, the building now occupied by DHS was a popular bowling alley and one of the first commercial buildings in Washington to have air conditioning. And from 1975 to 1990, what's now the Vet Center around the corner from NLS was home to the Clubhouse, an after-hours dance club founded by black members of DC's LGBTQ community. A post on the DC History Center's website says the Clubhouse attracted stars such as Patti LaBelle and Rudolf Nureyev, and at one point had 4,000 members. Quote, "There's a lot that I'll miss about this neighborhood and this building," says Broughton, who has often made that walk from the metro station to Georgia Avenue. But it's the people who work here who make NLS what it is, not the address. I'm looking forward to carrying on our mission in the Adams Building. End of quote. The captions for this article are, "Preparing for NLS's move, Mary Dell Jenkins and her music section colleagues are recycling hard copy Braille music scores that have been digitized." NLS's new home, the Library of Congress John Adams Building on Capitol Hill, and the building NLS is leaving in Northwest Washington, D.C. Adams Building photo by Carol M. Highsmith, Library of Congress, Prints and Photographs Division. Director Jason Broughton joined the rest of the NLS staff in packing for the move to the Adams Building. And now for two related articles about Braille on Demand from National Library Service. This first article is from the Braille Book Review, March-April 2024. It is entitled, "NLS Braille on Demand Pilot Continues. Interested in Braille you can keep indefinitely? The NLS Braille on Demand Pilot Program now allows all registered patrons to receive 5 hard copy Braille books per month with no return date. Patrons may request books directly using the form at www.surveymonkey.com/r/NLS Braille on demand, or may contact their network library for assistance in filling their requests. Any Braille books available on BARD are eligible to be produced in hard copy by this program. Books will be mailed directly to the requesting patrons. The other article is from News, January-March 2024, and is entitled, Cookbooks and How-To Titles Prove Popular with NLS Braille on Demand Readers, by Mark Lehman, who is editor of News Magazine. Cooking Without Looking, Braille Preparation Methods and Techniques for Visually Impaired Homemakers began as a master's thesis by a University of Texas graduate student, Esther Knudsen Tipps, in 1956. Tipps surveyed blind homemakers about their needs in the kitchen and had students at the Texas School for the Blind test dozens of recipes, according to a 1958 story in the Clifton, Texas Record. Published with the help of the Library of Congress, Tipps Cooking Without Looking is still helping visually impaired cooks navigate the kitchen and undoubtedly produce delicious meals. It's also one of the most requested titles since NLS began offering its patrons hard copy Braille books on demand to keep on indefinite loan. Indeed, more than 500 of the 8,300 Braille on demand titles requested by NLS patrons since the program began in the summer of 2022 are cookbooks, a fact noted by the Washington Post in a December food section story. Bestsellers like the Harry Potter and the Lord of the Rings series, learning to read books like Nothing Fits a Dinosaur and Braille instruction manuals are also popular choices for NLS patrons. No surprise there. But a closer look at the most requested titles reveals the variety of interests that patrons have. There's a treasure of knitting patterns, Crochet Your Way, and other how-tos, puzzle books like Sudoku Easy to Hard, and The Biggest Riddle Book in the World, Spanish language instruction materials. With Braille on Demand, patrons can get those and any of the other 18,000 plus electronic Braille e-Braille books available on BARD, the NLS Braille and Audio Reading Download online service, embossed in hard copy Braille. It's been a smashing success, NLS Patron Engagement Section Head Tamara Rory says. With the development of the NLS Braille e-reader, an electronic Braille display provided free on loan to patrons, NLS has seen a big increase in digital Braille downloads from BARD, 424,319 titles in FY23, more than 32,000 over the previous year. But while eBraille is undeniably convenient, hundreds of books can be stored on the Braille e-reader, hard copy Braille is a better format for books that patrons want to be able to easily thumb through and jump from section to section, like cookbooks and crafts guides, or old favorites they want to read over and over. Initially, patrons could request one Braille on demand title per month. As the program has matured, that limit has been eased. But practicality prevails. Braille books are bulky and take up a lot of space on shelves. Quote, if they order too many books, they won't have anywhere to put them, Rory says. To speed delivery and keep costs down, Braille on demand books have cardstock covers
with simple labels and are comb-bound instead of hard-bound, like the Braille titles NLS produces and sends to libraries in its national network. Patrons have responded enthusiastically. "I adore this program," one patron in California wrote. "I love reading Braille, and the idea of having a small library is great," a Georgia patron wrote. The Braille on Demand program has benefits for NLS too, by reducing expenditures for mass producing and storing hard copy Braille books. It's also a key part of NLS's Braille Modernization Initiative, which began with development of the Braille e-reader. More than 7,000 NLS patrons who don't own expensive commercial Braille displays now have access to e-Braille books, and more e-Braille readers are being distributed by NLS libraries every month. More people are reading Braille because the barriers that were up have fallen down, Rory says. Currently, Braille books make up about 15% of the NLS catalog. To get more Braille titles onto BARD, NLS will begin using automated transcription software to create text-only Braille books from eBooks. The technology to do that has gotten very sophisticated, Rory says. Human Braille transcription is a lengthy process that requires diligent quality assurance review. That will always be required for some Braille books, like those cookbooks and crafts guides. But by using automated transcription to create what NLS is calling Express Braille, simple books that don't have tables, charts, or other non-text features can be quickly and economically brailled, proofed, and uploaded to BARD. The Braille Modernization Initiative also includes plans to begin integrating tactile graphics, such as the maps commonly included in fantasy books, to Braille on-demand books. And last year, NLS began producing wall and pocket-sized Braille calendars for its patrons. Caption: Content Quality Assurance Section Head Christopher Walker and Braille Quality Assurance Specialist Deborah Brown discuss a newly produced Braille on Demand book.
If you have questions about the Kentucky Council of the Blind, or you need information on resources for people with vision loss, call us at 502-895-4598 or email us at kcb@kentucky-acb.org. Sound Prints is a production of the Kentucky Council of the Blind and is heard each week on ACB Radio Mainstream at acbradio.org, Central Kentucky Radio Eye at radioeye.org, and the KCB website at www.kentucky-acb.org. Complete schedule information is also available on the website. Sound Prints is underwritten by the Louisville Downtown Lions Club and by the American Printing House for the Blind. This is Carla Rushable for Sound Prints. Have a great week, everybody.